What is romanticy?
Romanticy is romance and fantasy mushed together.
Okay.
It's very, very simple.
Okay, it's a great start.
Yes. Whenever you see a man who is like, you know, open the door, like very chivalrous, very, very considerate, very thoughtful, the comments will always say, oh my God, he was written by a woman.
So a man created in a woman's image?
Well, in another reason, I think, it's this state of dating these days, like the state of the man folk and how disappointed women are. I'm not saying every man is like that, please don't stone me. I'm just saying
we'll see what the comments comes up with.
Majority of man folk are just gliding by, doing the bare minimum, which is, even then, it's like, you could do a bit better, buddy.
Welcome to Story of Joy. I'm Michael, and today I'm joined by
Nadia.
Excellent. Very welcome here, Nadia. And what are we talking about today?
Today we're talking about romanticy.
So first of all, as someone who's not super familiar myself, and I think a lot of folks out there aren't, what is romanticy? And how is it different from what sound like the genres that feed into it?
So romanticy is romance and fantasy mushed together.
Okay.
It's very, very simple.
Okay, it's a great start.
Yes. But the reason why it's called romanticy is because the fantasy has to be integral to the story as much as the romance.
Okay.
So you can't just have like a little bit of fantasy. Like it has to be a whole world. It has to be rules. It has to be names to different creatures and all that, and what their role is in the world.
Talking about romanticy, so why do you like this genre specifically? What do you like about it?
So with romanticy, you get to escape. You're dealing with angels, demons, you're dealing with vampires. Like the oldest romance, like not the oldest, but one of the most successful romanticies that started this whole boom, I think, it's like the modern boom, I'd say, is Twilight, surprisingly. Because it's romance and it's fantasy.
Yeah, it's
a vampire.
Yeah.
So when Twilight did so well, people just kind of jumped on that bandwagon.
Yeah.
That's how you say it, right?
Yeah. I almost wonder, because when did that become hot? I remember the films came out around 2010-ish, I want to say. I'll be honest, I didn't pay close attention. So I sort of figured the novels came out in the early 2000s.
Yeah. And Twilight was the baseline for a lot of other novels, like Fifty Shades of Grey was actually fan fiction of Twilight.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of other novels were fan fiction based on, and then authors just changed names and, you know, took out the vampire part.
And, right. They basically took the form and just changed
Bits. Changed the genre, basically. Mm-hmm. It went from romanticy fan fiction into a contemporary romance.
Okay, got it.
But Twilight birthed a lot of the contemporary romance that is very successful today.
So then talking about how some of these people took the same framework and just made it contemporary, do you think really the only difference between romanticy and other types of romance is simply the setting, or is there something else that sets it apart?
It's definitely the setting, because when you have romanticy, the fantasy world has to be very intricate. Like in the series that I mentioned, The Black Dagger Brotherhood by J.R. Ward. I've read, and it's like so many books. It's like a long, long series for years now. And I've read probably 20 books out of, and there's like plenty more. She, like the author, she built such a very intricate world that you just kind of like get sucked into it. Like everything has like a reason. Everything has a place. And that really makes you, like, if you love fantasy, and so you love romance, like those
sure,
two,
sure.
it just combines them.
Yeah, because there's a lot of that world building, that attention to detail, like all of that.
With romance, like contemporary romance, I feel like it's a bit easier because you're just leaning on our actual world.
Yeah.
Like my novel that I wrote many moons ago, it's based in New York. It's not a fantasy book, but just a contemporary romance. So with contemporary, and I did start writing a few drafts, but like I put them aside because it is so demanding.
You mean for romance, like
for fantasy?
Oh, yeah.
Because you have to really think about, well, if I give this character powers, what are the loopholes? I'm always thinking loopholes because when I'm reading a book,
yeah,
and I'm like, well, wait, this doesn't make sense.
Right. Like, right. There has to be internal consistency and all exactly. that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm a bigger reader of fantasy, and I've read quite a number of things, but I know a very well-known contemporary author, Brandon Sanderson, mm-hmm. who you've probably heard of even if you haven't read his works. So I watch his podcast with Dan Wells. I've read some of his books. He finished a great series, Wheel of Time, when the author passed away. Mm-hmm. But he talks about the world building and the need for rules. And like, because if you can just like hand wave it, it kind of pulls people out. They're not interested. There have to be constraints that make it difficult for the characters to achieve their objective, right? It's like, yes, magic, but if it's just like, oh, and kind of it solves all your problems, they're like, oh, well, there's no
point.
Right, there's no point. There's no challenge or struggle that needs to be overcome. And in a way, you flatten that arc.
Exactly. I mean, think about it. Even Superman has a weakness.
Kryptonite. Yeah, exactly.
So, like, even the most powerful being in the DC universe, he's still weak to something. Because if it's, like you said, if it's too easy, then it's boring. Then you'll be just done with, like, one chapter. There'll be a short story instead of a novel.
So when it comes to romanticism, I guess, why do you think it's exploded in recent years?
There are a few reasons. I think one of the reasons is because of, you know, COVID. We were staying home. Mm-hmm. We were all stuck. And a lot of times people were just writing, escaping. You know, people, it's hard right now, like for everyone. Doesn't matter how well you're doing, it's mm-hmm. still hard. So people want to escape. They mm-hmm. want to escape. They want to be happy. And another reason, I think, it's the state of dating these days. Like the the men folk and how disappointed women are. I'm not saying every man is like that. Please don't stone me. I'm just saying.
We'll see what the comments comes up with.
Majority of men folk are just gliding by, doing the bare minimum, which is even then, it's like, you could do a bit better, buddy.
So then do you think that romanticism is generally by and aimed at women?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yes.
Just like,
and that's my impression too. To be fair, but
not to say there are no male fans, because they are. But yes, the marketed. The audience is women. Mm-hmm. There's a saying says a man written by he's a man written by a woman. That's a big thing online. Uh-huh. I'm chronically online, so I can vouch.
Okay.
But like, whenever you see a man who is like, open the door, like very chivalrous, very mm-hmm. very considerate, very thoughtful, the comments will always say, oh my god, he was written by a woman.
So a man created in a woman's image.
Well, in I guess in her, like, she want, like, when a woman, and I did the same thing with mine, like when I wrote my novel, mm-hmm. you write the man that you kind of want to see in your reality,
sure.
but you have not seen. So sure. And you know, it's I guess it's unfair sometimes that, you know, women write men this way, because men are humans after all. We all are not perfect. But then you do stumble upon a man who is like, wow, he's like so great. And then you hear so much about him, and mm-hmm. you get inspiration to be like, so yeah. there are men like that. So you're right.
Well, like in a lot of different media, particularly like film and TV, we talk about the male gaze, right? Mm-hmm. Which is very overt, and I think we're all familiar with it.
Yeah.
In a way, and just having, based on what I read, there is, I would say, a flavor of the female gaze
mm-hmm.
In these novels.
Absolutely, yeah.
Which is interesting.
Female gaze is, you know, everyone thinks like, oh, he has to be like shredded and muscles. Not saying you don't have to be, because women love a guy that takes care of himself.
Who doesn't, you know, like a good view? Like
it's like saying that, men don't, men like hot women, like, and men, women don't care about the looks of their men. That's not true. We all have eyes. We're all visual creatures. We want to like what we see. That's why a lot of the heroes in the books are 6 feet and, you know, strapping and whatnot.
They tend to be in good shape. That's exactly. My recollection. I don't remember any descriptions that were anything
especially
else.
Especially in, let's say, the Sarah Mass, I think.
Or we were talking about that earlier. Is it Moss or Mass?
Mass,
I don't know.
No idea.
People in the comments, inform us.
So even for her, when she writes her creatures. They're like 7 feet tall with like 20 feet long wings or whatnot.
Yeah, I don't really know. There's a lot going on there.
So it's, you know, it's fantasy. So she's making the heroes larger than life. Back to the point, that's why I think it boomed, because a lot of women are escaping into this world where men are basically just tens across the board. You know, 10 in looks, 10 in character, 10 in everything. It's pretty much around the same mark. And I'll also have to add that a lot of the characters in romantasy are morally gray, like the heroes. They're not always these perfect
people. Kind of anti-hero-ish.
Kind of anti-hero, thing, yeah. So it's almost like a woman that, like, women want a man that, like, oh, I'll burn the world for you type of, you know, I'm devoted only for you. Yeah. Feels good, right? So that's kind of the, you know, the vibe.
So then what are some authors or series or books that you're particularly fond of?
Well, my top favorite is Sylvia Day. Shout out to Sylvia Day. Sylvia Day wrote many types of genres. She's written historical, she's written contemporary, she's written fantasy.
Okay, so she's all over the map within romance.
Yes.
Or was it fantasy?
Or romantic.
Okay, I want to double check.
She's a romance author, just who
dives across all these different settings. Okay.
Yeah, so the way she writes, my favorite series of hers is contemporary. It's the Crossfire series. I think it's four books. The first one is Bear to You. It's just the way she writes the characters. They are extremely flawed people. They're very, like, they're going through their own stuff, but even though they're going through all that hardship, they're still, like, they manage to make it through together, which is, you know, it's so nice to see. Also, like, the guy, the way she writes him.
Yeah. So okay.
Good. So it's good.
So before we even connected, I had read a fair bit of work by Sarah J. Maas, her entire Throne of Glass series, and then a bit of, I think it's a Court of Thorns and Roses. The first one I actually thought was quite decent. Grim, dark romanticy, a lot of genre thing going on there. I was like, okay. The romantic bit, honestly, I didn't care about. I was like, right, I am who I am. And I was like, all right, this is fine. I mean, obviously, I took note. But I was like, it was like a really compelling bit of world building and storytelling and all that sort of stuff. And yeah, it was pretty grim and it was pretty dark and it was like kind of brutal and all that sort of stuff. But I think it was 7 books.
That's a lot.
I read all of it. I was like, well, I'm already here. And I was like, honestly, I generally enjoyed it. The other series, I was not a fan. I stopped. I gave it a go.
Yeah.
But I was just like, I actually genuinely felt that the plot was suffering at the cost of focus on the romance and quasi-erotica. It was definitely far more of that than in Throne of Glass. Throne of Glass, there's a lot of in Goes to Black, essentially, right?
Yeah.
And you'd get her inner monologue about how she feels about what she's seeing and all that sort of stuff. Pretty tame. But A Court of Thorns and Roses, like that one, it's a lot more of this, and the whole relationship just feels super inappropriate. The character, I was like, this is violating at least 10 laws, and that's just on page 2.
I mean, I have not read those books. But I've heard that a lot of people, like, are crazy about them, especially women. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, I genuinely want to ask, like, why people like it. Because I don't have a problem with the romance bit. I actually just don't think it's particularly well written. But yeah, I thought Throne of Glass was very good. I think it just didn't land the other series, which is fine. To some extent, it may just not have been written for me, and that's okay.
That's fine, that's why there are different genres for everybody.
100%. Yeah. Well, I don't dislike the genre in general. It's like, because I was curious, and so that's why I was reading. I was like, well, these are big ones that everyone's talking about. So it's like, it should give me a sense of the flavor of the genre and all that sort of thing.
I see what you mean. Not every romance novel that I read landed with me.
Right. So, and like I said, Throne of Glass, definitely had the romance. I mean, you had like, oh gosh, probably people are going to correct me. I want to say the male who's 500 years old, and like the female is like 18-ish, and like, all right,
we will. It's another Edward and Bella situation.
Yeah, but and this is a very common thing, which I have questions about. I don't know if you have answers, or I have to just wait for the internet to tell me, like why.
That I don't. Maybe it's because it's this timeless creature. I think what it is, it's like this creature that's lived so long, centuries, and she's this person. Like, out of everyone and all the centuries that has been through, it makes her so much. It's the, I like to call it the YN effect.
The what?
So it's another internet. Another internet thing. It's called a YN, which stands for your name. Oh. And a lot of people, when they read or see a movie or deal with like celebrities, they start building these fantasies about them, and they inject themselves into their fantasies. Like, this, let's say, actor or singer is interacting with me in my fantasy. So this type of it's a lot in Tumblr and other fan fiction. It's when the person who's writing the fan fiction is basically inserting themselves into the story, and that's why they call it YN.
Okay, like, so in a way, these characters are serve as stand-ins for the reader to be able to insert themselves.
The women. Kind of, yeah. A lot of times when women...
Okay, yeah, I guess a man can be like, I want to be...
Or a man,
I don't know.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's, you know, when you, as a woman, when you're reading romance, and for me, it's very hard if I cannot relate to the female character. I've read books where I literally wanted to smack the person, the main hero, because, like, why would you do that? Why are you acting this way?
And that brings us a little bit to one author you mentioned is Jennifer Armentrout, which was my homework assignment for this episode, I very gamely went and read the first book only. I didn't have time for others. It wasn't an opposition, which I believe is Half-Blood. Right. It's a pretty easy read.
It's very easy. I mean, I started rereading it also to try to be more... But I remember it, so I was like, I know what happens.
Yeah.
So for me, that was, I think, one of the first, it was one of the first novels I've read by Jennifer L. Armentrout. And the reason why I really connect to it is because as a child, I really, really loved anything with Greek mythology.
Oh, okay.
So I grew up with ancient Egypt stories and Greek mythology. So anything relating to that, I was always always into it. So when I saw that it's basically... a novel about a girl who is not pure blood. She's half blood. She's half, and by pure, I mean like she has her blood from the gods, basically. It's I like a world where I understand the characters, like I understand what's going on. So when they're starting to talk about Apollo or Artemis, I'm like, oh, I know these characters.
They're familiar.
These gods. Yeah, so it's easier for me to read. Also, who doesn't want to read about a girl kicking ass?
Right.
As a girl, I mean, I like reading.
Sure,
I like strong women in books.
And she definitely is.
Yes.
Like in a certain kind of archetype of that, I would say, where it's more like external, forceful. So I thought it was okay, even like after kind of filtering. That the world building, I thought it was clever that she drew on things a lot of people, particularly in an English-speaking/Western audience, are going to be familiar with, right? The Greek thing. So I have to say, it taking place in the South and like something in Greek, but like in South Carolina and Tennessee, totally threw me out of the book occasionally. I was like, I don't know what's going on. And I only sort of understood the world. Her world building was, despite having kind of made it easy, by, I don't know if you'd call this like, low fantasy, the way you have like Lord of the Rings, which is high fantasy, where it's totally a different world. Like, I think Harry Potter.
I think it's more, so that's, I see what you mean. This one was more like, it's a regular world, but we also have like gods and creatures.
It's our world like that we would recognize plus this stuff. But even after that, it's like, I don't really understand the institutions. I understand some rules.
That does get more clarified with the other books.
Okay.
Every book has a bit more of the world building
going on. She may have been figuring it out. Because something I've also learned is a lot of authors are figuring it out as we are. You know, someone like Brandon Sanderson, as I said earlier, tends to be someone who like really figures it out from the start. He gets great pleasure in his world building, and you can see it. Also, yeah. His magic systems as well, which, like if you read Mistborn, it's a very interesting. It's probably one of the most novel magic systems I've ever read.
Mm-hmm.
Is it my favorite? I don't know, but it's probably the most creative that I've ever come across. So her world building to me was, there were gaps,
mm-hmm.
right? I found Alex frustrating.
Yeah, as you should. She's 17.
Right. It felt like she was writing what someone our age thinks a 17-year-old is like. And obviously there's plenty of truth to it, but it felt a little extra, like set to 11.
I guess I see what you mean, but like as someone who was reading it when I was like in my early 20s.
Mm-hmm. You're much closer.
I was much closer, and I was reflecting, and I was like, yeah, I was kind of dumb at that age, you know.
I'm not going to defend my decisions from when I was 17, to be sure, but
I didn't find that she was, you know, portraying a 17 as like a 30-something-year-old. Like for me, when I was reading it, I was like, oh yeah, that's like, I related, because like something that I would do or I would feel in that age.
But no, I mean, for YA and what it is, I was like, I thought it was fine. So we've talked about some other authors. Now, as we sort of intimated already, you yourself are a published author, yes, I believe, of romance.
Yes, a contemporary romance, yeah.
Okay, so tell me a few things. So one is, what kind, so you said contemporary romance, what are some of the themes that you tend to, like, what got you into it? You talked about it a little bit.
Yeah.
What are some of the themes, and what do you enjoy about it?
So for me, like I said, it started when I was reading 50 Shades of Grey, which, mm-hmm. disclaimer, I do love it. Don't come at me, Jesus. I love the movies too, okay? I do love 50 Shades. But I'm myself, I'm a very, I would say, confident woman. I don't trash talk myself as, mm-hmm. much as Anna did in the book. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of hard for me to relate to that. Mm-hmm. I'm like, there's no way that not 1 minute of the day you look in the mirror and you're like, oh, I kind of look nice today.
Right.
Cute. Like that never happens. Mm-hmm. And I don't like the oblivious. Sometimes they make the heroines very oblivious to their charms. Like you have men literally dropping everything for you, fawning over you. And you're like, ah, I'm the worst. You're like, no.
It kind of makes me think of some like romance movies where they throw glasses on her, therefore she's not good looking or something. But yeah. The audience is like, obviously she's hot.
Yeah.
Right? And then it sort of evolves from there. It's a little bit of a trope.
A ponytail and glasses. That's how they ugly the woman. Yeah. But when I was reading it, I was just like, why would you say that? I was sort of starting getting heated, and I was venting to my friend about it. And I'm like, why would she do that? And she said, like, if you're really that passionate about it, just write your own version. And at that time, I was a stay-at-home mom. And whenever my kids would go to sleep, I would just crack open my laptop and just started writing. And I don't know what came over me. Just I started having this, like, it started with, like, a scene that I kept seeing in my head. Of the characters interacting, and it just would not leave my head. So I just sat down and started writing it, and it took me about 7 months, I think. And I finished, I mostly wrote like around 3-4 o'clock in the morning.
Oof.
Yeah. But yeah, I started writing, and I think the element in my novel is that we have a very strong female character, mm-hmm. which is back then not seen anywhere.
Okay.
Like that, I mean, I shouldn't say anywhere because I didn't write or read.
But it wasn't typical.
But it was not typical. Mm-hmm. Majority of the time, the female character is meek, you know, like a little gray mouse. She's always shy. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is just not realistic for me because I cannot connect to that personality. So I created a very strong character. She knows what she looks like. She knows her strengths, but she's a socialite. She has no like real life skills. She never worked. She was just basically
Networking can be a skill, I guess.
You know, her skill was going on vacation and partying.
You know, I think I like that skill. I could sign up for that.
And, you know, she comes from a Russian family, which obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
One thing about writing, a lot of people ask me when I was writing, how did you create this? I'm like, you have to draw from what you know. Mm-hmm. Because if I write about, let's say, being French, I'm going to mess it up. I don't know what it's like being French. I'm not French.
All right. Well, this is, I think, sometimes the challenge of, say, men writing women and women writing men.
Absolutely.
I think. Like, it can be done well,
yeah.
Right? Again.
If you know the other sex well, but if you don't, you're so out of touch.
Yeah, like, I think, because I've definitely read some of, like, even I am just like, this is clearly written by a guy. It's not very good. You know, this sort of, and like, a guy with a certain mindset, right? Because a guy doesn't actually have to write it poorly, but
yeah.
It happens often. And you've got even famous writers, again, I'll go back to Tolkien. Right? There are not many female characters. The ones he has are good, but they're limited. And I think he just was like, yeah, I don't really know how to write women, so I'm just not going to. But the women he does have are like powerful, mm-hmm. relevant, like that sort of the strong.
I just didn't like how the female characters mm-hmm. are always very clueless, and not just about what to do, but like about themselves. Like, you should be able to know yourself. You live within yourself. You should know yourself,
yeah.
You know? So that really was hard. Again, the intimacy moments are meant to propel the plot forward. You know, there are different elements that I thought about, like, well, it can't be complete smooth sailing, right? Because then it's boring.
You need conflict. Always
yeah,
need
you
conflict.
Always have to have conflict. And if someone does choose to read my book, I feel like I should give a disclaimer.
Uh-huh, okay.
So I left it in a cliffhanger because okay. I'm supposed to write the second one.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So if you don't like cliffhangers, you don't have to read it. But it's a good book. I like it. Sometimes I'll reread my own
book. To some extent, that's the most important thing.
Yeah.
Because I know a little bit about, you know, your history and all that sort of stuff. I can see this experience and process itself being a kind of catharsis thing for you, and mm-hmm. escape and an outlet
oh,
for
absolutely.
Different things.
Yeah.
Which is probably not, in a way, I can see that connecting with audiences, because the genre itself for readers is often that. So it might be nice for them to sort of recognize the same.
I mean, I published the book in 2014.
Oh, so wow. Okay.
It was a while 11 ago. Years ago, almost 12. And I still have readers reaching out to me sometimes, like, hey, are you ever going to release the second book?
Yeah,
and
right.
I feel awful because it's like 80% done.
Okay.
So I'm like, I will eventually. I'm so sorry. Life happens. And also, when I was writing the novel, I was married. So mm-hmm. it was much easier for me to tap into feeling like romantic feelings type
sure.
of thing, or at least project the romantic feelings mm-hmm. I wanted. I wrote it when I was in my mid-20s, I think.
Oh, okay.
And as a, you know, mom of two already at that mm-hmm. age, I wasn't doing what other 20-year-olds were doing. So like you said, it was like an escapism mm-hmm. for me. Like, at least someone was living life. Well, I'm awake at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Your characters?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, basically. So it was a big, like we said, catharsis and mm-hmm. like escapism experience.
Okay,
yeah.
Great. Now, having talked about your work and some of the other sort of big names in the genre, where do you think romanticy is going?
I think it's here to stay, for sure. Yeah.
Okay, so looking at sort of how things are going in general, who do you think, maybe one or two sort of hot authors that are up and coming, and what are some recommendations for those who either are already fans of the genre or really haven't gotten into it but maybe are open to it that you think they should be reading?
If you are looking into a very well-written series, and if you're into vampires who are badass and they kick ass, I would highly recommend The Black Dagger Brotherhood by J.R. Ward. It is a beautiful, intricate world of many, many books, and there are so many different characters there. I think it's 7 characters, men who are vampires, and they fight this enemy and they protect their
yeah
community. It's a beautiful world. It's beautiful romance. So if you guys are interested in that, I would recommend that.
I will say that if you are not familiar with the genre and you don't really know if it's your thing, I would say start off, and if you don't mind sort of darker fantasy, I would say Sarah J. Maas's Throne of Glass. It is a good one. It's intense and all that sort of stuff. And there is romance and all, it's definitely a thread throughout it.
I should throw in a little disclaimer.
Okay.
The books that I read are explicit, so just saying, if you're not into that, then just listen to Michael.
And then for those who are a little younger, let's say in your teens or 20s, you want to get into some sort of YA, that's to say young adult, I honestly think that the Armin Trout series I was referencing is very decent.
There's another one, Lux, called the Lux series.
I saw it come up, but I haven't
It's read about it. Aliens, but that's okay. Very cool too.
Okay, there you go. Folks have options.
Yep.
Also be sure to check out Nadia's writing. We've also put in some links in the description, so check those out.
My novel's called Emerald Eyes, and I write under a pen name, which is N.Michaels.
Awesome.
Yeah, so check it out if you like it.
Excellent. Well, thanks a lot, Nadia. And feel free to leave comments, questions, or thoughts below. Looking forward to it.